Coming up on today's show, Animal Kingdom is going to have some special events to celebrate the 50th anniversary of Earth Day and the 25th anniversary of the Disney Conservation Fund. Annual pass prices have increased again at Walt Disney World, and Hank and I find it increasingly harder to justify recommending that non-Florida residents or non-DVC members purchase one of these passes. In the main segment, Hank just got back from a Disney World trip with his three-month-old son. He's got a great trip report filled with all the tips you need to know around bringing an infant to Walt Disney World. Plus, he also shares his thoughts on the latest ongoings at the parks and his unique Rise of the Resistance experience. Stick around until the end of the show, where I'll be sharing all the ways you can stay connected to the WDW Opinion community. All that and more on this episode of WDW Opinion. Cue the music.
To all who come to this happy place, welcome.
This is the podcast where two friends, Connor,
you are a child's plaything,
and Hank,
you are a sad, strange little man, and you have my pity,
share their opinions, tips, and stories about anything and everything at Walt Disney World. Get ready, because this is WDW Opinion.
We're in the tower. We are ready for takeoff.
Hello, Opinioneers, and welcome to episode number 73 of WDW Opinion, the podcast where friends talk Disney. We share our Disney World opinions so that you can start planning for and daydreaming about your next perfect Disney vacation. We share our opinions with our blog, podcast, live streams, and more. Visit WDWopinion.com to check out all of our content and to see what we're up to in between episodes. I am your host, Connor Brown, and I'm joined by my co-host and Disney partner in crime, Mr. Hank Molsky. Hank, you just got back from a Disney trip where you and your wife took your two-month-old son along for the journey. The people want to know, they need to know, did you take him on Dumbo the Flying Elephant, and did you cry when it happened?
So there was a point during the trip where I was like, Aaron, I'm going to go on Dumbo. I got to go. And she goes, rightfully so, let's wait till he's a little more aware of what's going on.
So
she's like, why don't you save that one? Don't worry, though, Connor. Tears were shed on this trip, and I will tell you some more.
Is that when you didn't get to...
Stub my toe?
Yeah, stub your toe. No, but I guess that is true. I was thinking about that today, like... You know, kind of when we were working out what we're going to talk about. And on today's show, you know, Hank's going to give his trip report of his family's trip down there and how he took, you know, his son, Owen, who's 2 months, what that was like and stuff like that.
3 months, actually.
There you go. Even better. More mature. And I was thinking about how people might think, oh, that's so crazy. Why would you take that, you know, down there? But it's also in that thing of where they can't be scared yet. You know, I mean, they can get scared, but they don't really know what's going on.
Well, that's why, like, we didn't end up doing it, but that's why I was going to take him on Haunted Mansion, was because, like, he likes high contrast stuff.
Right.
But we found out, well, and again, more on this later, not a huge dark ride fan.
Oh, is it? That's all right. Well, did he, what was his, like, interactions with the characters, though? Was he freaked out at all by them, or?
No, it's just another
thing.
Shape with contrasting spots on the wall, and you know, someone that might touch him. So that's fun.
He gets nervous in dark rides, just like his father does. I know you. We had to drag you off of Winnie the Pooh last time. A lot of woozles and wazzles going on there.
This isn't Honey Hunt.
This isn't the Honey Hunt. Oh boy. Yep. So I'm very excited to talk about that. But to get started, let's get into news to opinion. This is our weekly segment where we each pick a recent Disney news story to discuss and share our thoughts and opinions on. My Disney news story of the week is that Disney's Animal Kingdom Park is going to host an exciting multi-day celebration for the 50th anniversary of Earth Day. This is coming directly from the Disney Parks blog. They say, what happens when the 50th anniversary of Earth Day and the 25th anniversary of the Disney Conservation Fund converge on the same day? We throw a party, of course. From April 18th to the 22nd, Disney's Animal Kingdom will host entertainment and activities throughout the park, culminating in an all-day extravaganza on Earth Day, April 22nd. Each day of the festivities includes a stellar lineup of expert speakers and entertainment, behind-the-scenes tours, specialty food and beverage, limited-time merchandise signings, character greetings, photo opportunities, special wilderness explorers activities for kids, and more. Hank, a couple cool things that they're going to do during this Earth Day celebration is they have a Wild by Nature speaker series where you will get to hear from some of Disney's Animal Kingdom's park experts, animal experts, educators, and conservation, quote-unquote, heroes at the Parks Theater in the Wild. That's where the Finding Nemo musical takes place. And during these, you can learn about the ways Disney's own conservation experts are working to save the planet. And they've also teamed up with people at National Geographic, the new Disney colleagues they have at Nat Geo. And there's going to be explorers and photographers who will share their stories from the front lines of their explorations, as well as wildlife photography and video techniques. And this is going to be going on during that Wild by Nature speaker series as well. Bunch of other things like Joe Rohde's Tiffin Talks that he did last year where he hosts a bunch of people.
He's down in the world this week.
Yeah, he hosts basically just a discussion at Tiffin's, and those were a big hit last year. He's doing it again. There's a couple, you know, ways to celebrate the Disney Conservation Fund. There's some other things going on as well. And apparently on Earth Day, if you can't make it to the park, Disney's Animal Kingdom will be one of the places featured in the global live television event, Born Wild, Earth Day Live,
perfect.
Which will be simulcast on National Geographic and Nat Geo Wild on April 22nd at 8 p.m. Central Time, it looks like. So this is very cool, Hank. I just like the fact that they bring more things to Animal Kingdom. We saw it earlier this year, well, I guess last year, with the holiday festivities. We've seen it in recent years, more so with the nighttime offerings. These things are cool because, you know, they don't really have a whole lot of seasonal events at Animal Kingdom that I would say like the other parks tend to have. But I think it's cool just because it brings in that not a zoo, you know, a vibe of Animal Kingdom. Bringing in these people very much like the education and entertainment, as they called it for Epcot, but this is continuing at Animal Kingdom. So yeah, I mean, if you're there from April 18th to 22nd, you can check out all of these cool things and much, much more. Hank, whatever happened to that? I thought there was supposed to be a Disney Plus series all about the veterinary teams at Animal Kingdom.
Oh yeah,
I haven't heard.
Well, you know what? You know what I think that was? It was the one day. Did that morph into the one day at Disney and the one part of that?
Oh, I hope not. It seemed like it was going to be a Nat Geo produced like series, kind of like, I don't know. There's a bunch of other ones about other veterinarians or whatever, but this seemed like it was going to be Animal Kingdom specific. It was one of the bigger ones that they announced at D23.
I remember that. Now that you mentioned that, in my head, those kind of, it did morph into the one day at Disney thing.
Yeah.
I hope that's not, well, who knows? They do need more content though.
Yeah.
I thought on that. I haven't been flicking on Disney Plus as often.
No, I haven't done it in a while either, actually.
We flipped on Aladdin the other night and I was like, whoa, I haven't opened up Disney Plus in a while.
Will Smith Aladdin, live action?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
What do you think of it?
Going into 2019, I was like, that is for sure going to be the worst one of 2019. And worst one being
worst live action
remakes. Yeah. Worst live action remakes. It is the one I desire to rewatch the most out of everything that came out last year.
Interesting compliment, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lion King, I don't feel like I ever want to watch that one again.
Okay.
I like the soundtrack though. But yeah, Connor, we're kind of fans of the Will Smith remake. And we're not alone. Over $1 billion that grossed at the box office, much to everyone's surprise.
Yeah, that was quite interesting. I haven't given that a watch yet, but you know.
You have not seen it yet?
I have not seen it, no. No, no, no.
Oh, we like it. It's good. It's very serviceable.
I'll add it to the queue. I'll add it to the queue of Disney Plus streaming.
Apparently your queue is so overflowing with content
right
now. It's
bubbling over.
On the Disney Plus queue.
It's a babbling brook of content. Yeah. All right, there you go, Hank. You can honor Disney's Animal Kingdom Park and the 50th anniversary of Earth Day, April 18th through the 22nd. Hank, what is your Disney news story of the week?
Connor, death, taxes, and
Disney
raising prices,
tickets on tickets.
Well, actually, not tickets.
Connor. Annual passes
and ticket options. Price increases took effect this past week. So, like we like to say on this podcast, death, taxes, and Disney raising the prices happened yet again. Again, Connor, this isn't like this. We can beat a horse with this a lot. Beat a dead horse. Sorry,
we can also horse. Beat a horse with this. Though.
We this is an anti
horse beating
animal
podcast.
Cruelty. Yeah. Yes, thank you. We hate the Kentucky Derby. another year, more price increases. Kind of that it went up. There were some numbers that spiked a bit more than I realized. Like I was like $150 to some passes that got tacked on, and then you know nominal changes here and there. It's always funny though. The piece that I wanted to inject about this. I guess I'll just hit a few points from the news article that was released. This is from WDW Info. The pricing has actually stayed the same on the one-day tickets, which is how they advertise, like the base fee. So the low is what the minimum price is $109, and the maximum remains at $159 for a one-day park ticket without hopper option. And then there were a bunch of changes to passes, essentially. Even there's not a good sentence in here that I can highlight just because it's so complex. But the thing that I wanted to highlight is it's always funny to me is it catches everyone by surprise when it happens. It is like there's no rhyme or reason to the exact precise date that it drops. And it leaves a lot of people that are annual pass holders kind of going, yes, I got it last week, or oh my god, I missed it by a week, and that just cost me $200.
And that's the difference, you know. If you're going once a year or whatever, you're not buying an annual pass. So when you need to purchase your park hoppers, your normal tickets, you're most likely going to be doing it with a park package, or you're going to be doing it, you know, a few days before, 60 days out, so that you can do your fast passes. So you can't really plan to buy it as much as you want. And now with this whole idea of, the ticket prices are different for different days and stuff, it doesn't matter when you buy the normal ticket. You buy it when you buy it. And if the prices went up on one day, well, it doesn't matter. I have to buy it on this day regardless. With annual pass, it's very unfortunate for a lot of people because if the price increases, like you're saying, Hank, they can't do anything about it unless they, you know, want to somehow sign up for an extra year or whatever. I can't renew my annual pass until 60 days before it expires anyway. So that's what they're doing. They want to only give you a certain amount of time. So if they do increase the price, they can tack that on or whatever. Yeah, but I quickly, it was crazy when this came out. I realized, oh wow, I'm 59 days out from expiration, and I had a trip coming up in April anyway. So I renewed my pass, but
good.
I didn't see much of an increase, but I do have the DVC pass, so that's got some blackout dates, only available to DVC members. Substantially cheaper than the other annual pass options. Next to like the Florida resident, it's pretty comparable. It's about the same.
Yeah. I need to buy some real estate in Florida.
Yeah.
I need an annual pass
or something. But I mean,
good Lord.
The prices on them nowadays are crazy, Hank. I can't really justify, unless you go a lot, I can't justify getting a normal annual pass.
Oh my gosh, Connor, you can't. If you live out of state, there's no reason to buy an annual pass to Disney World if you live out of state, unless you're like a reporter on it, which I guess we take the – sorry about that, folks.
Yeah.
I should buy one.
Yeah. But it is – right now, Disney Platinum Plus is
$1,300.
$1,300.
You gotta, You have to go a lot.
Got to go a lot.
And even Aaron and I, there are a couple times, there, even the past few years, I've gone a couple times a year. Or even, I don't think I've ever hit a three mark. Maybe I have within a calendar year. But, and I'm still not finding that I would get achieve value with that type of thing.
It, you know what comes up a lot? It's, so Platinum Plus, which has everything and gets you into the water parks, all that too. That's $1,300. And then $1,200 for the Platinum Pass, which just gets you into the four theme parks. Those are the two the general public can buy. And then they have a couple other ones for Florida residents and Disney Vacation Club members. What this does, Hank, that $1,295 price, it starts to do what we always talk about with free dining. People clamoring at free dining, saying, I got to do it. I got to do it. And then they don't realize, oh, wow, I'm actually spending a lot more money because of the, you know, the ramifications or the restrictions. I have to stay an extra day. I have to get park hoppers for every single day.
Yep.
When you get into this thing of, well, maybe Hank, you were going to go on a trip, but you were only going to go into the park 2 out of the 4 days that you were there. Oh, well, if I buy an annual pass, then I'd be saving this much, you know, and I can go in all four. It's not the cheapest way to save money is by not spending. It's like, well, if I just buy an extra chicken at the store, I can get another one free. Yeah, but you know what else you could get for, you know, relatively cheaper?
Just not two more chickens.
Two more chickens. Yeah, exactly. Because you buy chickens at the grocery store, right?
You I was going to say, where are you, what have you got at the grocery stores in Maryland?
A Harris Teeter. I go right up. I said, like, one chicken, please. And they say, sir, you have to stop asking this. Please get out. I go, okay. But I think the weird part is that I ask it at the pharmacy. But that's not the point. So there you go.
They think you're a witch.
Prices have increased.
The Witcher's back.
But yeah, not too much. I mean, you know, the internet got a little bit upset at this, but I think relatively speaking, not too much when compared to other.
Not apocalyptic yet. We don't have that Disney news that's going to hit us eventually that we'll be clamoring for Bob Iger's resignation.
And we're ready for it. And we can't wait. Oh, yeah. We can't wait. Hank and I have talked about this before. When you've been to Walt Disney World many times, there comes a point when you want to start sharing your love of the place with others. We've mentioned how one of our favorite things now is taking people who have never been, or been only once or twice, to Walt Disney World. We get to share the ins and the outs of the place that we know so well, but we also get to hopefully convince the other person we're taking there why they should love this place the same way we do. We've done it with many people now, but Hank just got to do it recently with someone very special, his now 3-month-old son. Many, myself included, called Hank a lunatic for taking a baby that young to the parks. But he listened to no one. Probably, rightly so, because it seemed like he and the rest of the Molsky clan had a great time in Disney. So Hank, I'm going to let you take it away. Give us your trip report of what it's like taking a 2-month-old, 3-month-old to Walt Disney World.
Yeah, he was a full-on 3-month-old for the trip.
Good.
So I'll break this down for you so you got a little bit of structure for you here. I'm so glad you led off with that way, because the way that I'm blocking out this special trip report is part one is traveling with a newborn and all the questions and all that type of stuff that goes with it. For you and me, totally new ball of wax there. And maybe a lot of the listeners in this podcast or people that have done it before or have never done it before that are interested to learn, you know, like, oh, what's it like for this guy to go through it with his wife for the first time? I remember my first time. Or, wow, this is something I could actually see myself doing down the line. Because happy to share all that stuff, the tips that we collected. And, hey, maybe the stuff that we did wrong. We're looking forward to hear from people about that. But that's part one. Part two, Connor, we got to get into the day-to-day recap, just a little bit of ins and outs of the parks, what we saw, what I was hearing, experiencing, that type of thing. And then part three, I'd like to wax a little poetically at the end just about my overall experience on the recent trip and what it means for future trips. So Let's get into it. You hit the nail right in the head. This was a trip with a newborn who had never traveled before, too. So that, there's that everything that comes with traveling with a newborn for the first time. We also did have my in-laws that came with us. So that was a brother-in-law, sister-in-law, mother-in-law, father-in-law. Mother-in-law had not been to Walt Disney World since December 1971.
Wow. That's awesome.
And yes. And a father-in-law who had never been, except on I sent him on the resort loop once before when they were visiting in Orlando. So took them into the parks for the first time. But traveling with a newborn, I think it kind of starts kind of right up top with packing, getting ready. Definitely had a few comments, and I've seen this before. It's not like we're crazy people. Maybe we are. I don't know.
Yes.
But the amount of stuff that a newborn requires. So my wife checked a bag, and then we had two carry-ons. One carry-on for everything that Owen had, one carry-on for everything that I had, and the check bag had almost all of Aaron's stuff in it. Maybe a few items for Owen that we didn't want to put in the carry-on. But then there's the stroller and the car seat that goes attached to the stroller, thank goodness. And the fact that you can gate check strollers and car seats for free, big tip. If people didn't realize that, I'm so thankful for that because that's another two things that you wouldn't have to pay for a round trip. But once the second that you get to the gate and you drop that stroller in a gate check bag, which, by the way, another tip, you should buy a gate check bag because those things get beat up down below the plane and you want that thing in a gate check bag for sure if you're bringing a nice stroller with you. Same goes for a car seat. You look like a crazy family when you have two carry-ons, a newborn, this huge bag with a stroller in it, and another huge bag with a car seat that you got to lug down the bridgeway all the way down to the front of the plane. And then you're like, okay, now I got to sit on this flight for 2 hours and keep this newborn content. But yeah, packing is the second that you roll through that airport and you've got all that stuff, you feel like, oh boy, I've entered this stage of my life.
How did Owen do on the flight?
It was actually – so – and a lot of people will probably – I could almost hear people with children or newborns at home probably nodding their head around along with this. A three-month-old is extraordinarily easy to travel with on a plane.
Oh, really?
He slept the whole time.
Yeah.
Didn't get bothered by his ears popping or not popping or however that works.
Yeah.
Fed him on takeoff and landing. On the way home, he was a little fussy at one point on the flight, but we immediately just fed him and he was okay. So it's just like, you know how to control, if you've got a good, content baby that you know his social cues and whatnot, it's not going to be too bad.
We have a friend like that. He gets really fussy and then you just feed him.
Kind
of. Exactly. A little better, I guess. Anyways.
Another thing kind of that we actually have joked about this in the past, this with maybe this friend of ours that we've spoken about, is if you're flying to and from Orlando, you're not on a normal commercial flight.
No.
You are on a flight with a lot of children and a lot of families. And not just saying for the on our way back on our return flight home, there are a lot of children. So the noise was eclipsed. Even the time that he fussed, he wasn't the fussiest baby or the loudest child type of thing. So that's always, you know, check mark in that book.
Yeah.
But even on the other one where I think he may have been the only newborn on that flight, it was a much more adult feeling flight because we flew a little bit later at night. I don't think maybe as many families choose like light night flights to Orlando. I don't really understand that. But you just kind of feel like people know that the families don't want to have a fussy baby on the flight. So they're kind of like praying for you, pal. Hope you make it through. Good luck. There's a lot more camaraderie than like that glaring dissent that you might feel.
Yeah.
At least that's our experience.
Yeah. Well, anytime I see a newborn on a plane, I turn to the parent and I say, that thing better shut up. Or we're going to have problems.
That's what I thought. Yeah. That's what I thought everyone was going to be like. I was like, everyone's going to be like, you better keep that baby quiet or I will come up there and give you a mean look.
I got a Harry Potter book number 4. I got to finish on this flight. Goblet of Fire. Right. You not
yeah.
be
ruined. And it's a 2-hour flight. It's really not that bad. A little bit under 2 hours. We able to do that. priority boarding, Connor, if you're a family with newborns or traveling with strollers, oh yeah, that's a godsend, because it also gives you time to go in there and let your wife, who's worried about the germs on the airplane, rightfully so, wipe down the seats, sterilize everything for the newborn, which is fair considering we are kind of traveling during flu season and the coronavirus.
Yeah.
So it's stressful, but I really did appreciate the camaraderie that you kind of pick up on just from people being like, you know, good luck. Hey, your baby did great.
Nice. Very cool.
Thanks. No one ever congratulated me on my travel before. So.
I've always been a good boy on every flight. I haven't gotten any of this.
Yeah, none of that. Connor, arrival at the airport, having the Magical Express is, I think, the second that you have that family, it's really nice as, like, you know, a solo traveler that doesn't want to, you know, foot the bill for a Lyft or an Uber or whatever. And kind of, we've talked about this, sets the tone, gets you ready for the experience. It's that first touch of magic. But landing at an airport with all that stuff that I just talked about and everything that's going on, you know, I think he may have been waking up. It's stressful. You can be as level-headed as you want to be, but it's still, you're going to be a little bit scattered. And having the constant that is a Magical Express bus waiting for you is like a true beacon of light at that airport. You don't have to worry about, oh, shoot, I got to find my phone. I got to pull up the app. I got to find, you know, the right Uber. I got to be at the right station. All that stuff that comes with, you know, car share, car rental, any of that is – You feel that sweet sense of relief with Magical Express, and I can really see why it's such a value add to a lot of families traveling there.
Yeah, it's just a peace of mind and a convenience, and you know, like you said, my favorite part is the tone that it sets for the first one. Did you guys go and retrieve your bags, or did you have them bring it to you?
We did resort changes out the wazoo, which I will not belabor too much. So we switched over to Coronado Springs pretty last minute.
Gotcha.
From Pop Century. So we did not have the right tags.
Gotcha.
Sent to our home, which, by the way, people, plan your trip 60 days in advance, not just for the fast passes, but for all the convenience that comes with.
Oh, yeah.
Checking bags and getting the right bag tags and all that type of stuff. And plus, it's a little bit easier on the resort computer systems if you've just only had one room in your system for a while. Believe me, Disney makes it easy if you play it easy with them. Connor, I will note, though, so we did have the Magical Express, but one of the reasons that Aaron and I do travel to Central Florida so often is we do have family down there. We have a grandmother and an aunt lives in Florida, in Orlando, and grandmother lives in Daytona Beach Shores, which is about an hour and 15 minutes away from Disney World. So we did rent a car at the end of our stay at the Disney property. I took an Uber to the Silver Car property there.
Where's that?
It's only at 26 airports in the United States. It's kind of it's a quote unquote luxury car service.
Gotcha.
That Audi directly provides. So it's all Audis, and it was an amazing experience. And let me tell you this, it is probably a little bit more expensive. It is a little bit more expensive than your run-of-the-mill car rental. However, if you're out there traveling with a travel credit card, or if you're in the market for a travel credit card, Visa Infinite credit cards. There's a whole family of the Visa Infinite ones that have a huge suite of benefits, which is a credit card that I applied for and had on this trip, which helped me many, many times on this trip, including a Lyft Pink membership that I was using, a 20% discount around property, among other things. So I had the Chase Sapphire Reserve card that I applied for, and this gets you a big discount at Silver Car if you have any of these Visa Infinite cards, which also include, there's like a Ritz-Carlton reward credit card. There's a UBS Visa Infinite credit card. U.S. Bank has a Visa Infinite credit card that you can also apply for like travel and travel perks. And we got a great deal on the Silver Car there. Free car seats. In the car, really clean, big cars, nice, easy to manage, Apple CarPlay built in, all that jazz.
So you had to go back to the airport to get this?
Yeah, I got an Uber there one morning from the resort. Cool. But hey, highly recommend that if you're looking for it. Of course, we brought our car seat,
yeah.
But they would have had a free car seat for us if I had actually decided to do that, which we'll do in the future for sure. We just kind of wanted to have his to be able to transfer him around when at this age he's easy to sleep in, and wanted to have the portability of our car seat that clicked in and out of things. Also with babies, the room, Connor, pack and plays. It's all the jazz. There's not cribs anymore at Disney property. They bring the pack and play to your room, which is just essentially, for those that don't have children, it's a bed that pops out. It's like a little four-legged thing. It's like a pitching a tent, essentially an inverse tent in your room that the child will sleep on. Really practical, because they'll just come and set it up in your room for you. Pops open. We had plenty of room in Coronado Springs to have the pack and play out. We actually didn't put it away, but if we were like in a bind for room at like Pop Century, it'd be really easy to disassemble it in the morning and put it away. So we really liked having that option at Coronado Springs. Connor, do you have any questions about the pack and play, the sleepability of that?
Could I fit in it?
No.
Oh, okay. That's all the questions.
Well, actually, if you curl up in a little ball.
Could you put chickens in it?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
That's a big thing for me.
Yeah, you could fit a few in there.
Oh, cool.
They wouldn't be able to fly out. Yeah. It's got nice big high walls on it.
Love it. That sounds great. And I do know, you know, put that in your reservation notes.
Yes.
For sure.
Yes, like definitely.
When you're doing online check-in, there's a couple places you can do that. If you're working with a travel agent, have them put it in there too, because those are limited. Just like rollaway beds are also limited. They don't have, you know, an infinite amount across Disney property and at each specific resort. So you definitely want to make a note of that as soon as possible so that they try to, you know, set one aside for you when your check-in time comes.
So I think the biggest things with traveling with a child are travel. That's why I just spent all that time talking about it. There's so much thought that goes into it. It consumes so much of like your mind space going into and out of a trip. But then the other two big things are, what do babies do? They sleep. So we just talked about that. And then they eat. And then they expel what they eat. And there is all the fun that comes with eating and changing diapers in Disney World. So I would be remiss if I didn't mention what it was like trying to figure out the right way to feed and change a baby in Walt Disney World. So
I'm very excited. Please.
I will say, and I've said this for a while, and I don't know if other people identify with this or not. I think changing diapers is one of the easiest parts of parenthood. So with all the stuff that comes with it, changing a diaper is as routine as it gets. It is a constant. You can get in and out of there quickly. with your child, it's much less gross than changing some other child's. I think every parent can identify with that. But it's definitely stressful when you're out in public, trying to find the right place for that. One of the tips that we had from a family that went down recently with a newborn said, go buy the biggest portable changing mat that you can from Amazon and just have that thing ready to Velcro open and expand on every changing table in Disney World. You will feel so much stress relief by having that thing. So we did. And Connor, pretty much every time that we needed to change Owen, we were going into whatever bathroom we needed, throwing that thing down, opening it wide open, didn't have to feel like we were needed to sanitize everything because it's got this huge mat. Obviously, you know, plenty of sanitizing before and after. Side note, before I forget, I think we went through like 30 bottles of hand sanitizer and like 30 packs of wipes on that trip, because it's like after every ride, you're like, oh God, I gotta get this baby clean.
Better safe than sorry.
So you throw you get that big changing mat from Amazon, throw it down, and it really does make things just flow so much easier. You're in Disney World. There's changing tables out the wazoo. We never went in one of the parent centers just because, like, you kind of have to. Diaper changes you don't like plan them. You're like, oh, we're gonna go at 10:15. We'll be on that side of the park, and we'll be going into the mother's room for a diaper change over there. Parents know that it's more like, oh, okay, it's time. What bathroom are we the closest to? So have that portable mat down. We also had some disposable mats to put underneath stuff if we felt like we needed it in certain times. We didn't use them too often. And then there's feeding, Connor. You got to feed the baby. whether it's breastfeeding with mom or on a bottle.
Chicken nuggets.
Chicken nuggets. Burger,
no, ribs. No.
That's our other baby that we take to Disney World. Oh, we already talked about him.
That's right. The other one. The other one that gets fussy. Yes. Gotcha. Okay.
Yes. Disney does have a lot of places where you can feed. We didn't do it, but we had some great tips from a lot of people that flooded in with help, which is just really fun about going, you know, to Disney World for the first time. A lot of people will be like, oh, man, I've done that. I remember my first time. They were like, feed the back of go to Carousel of Progress. Go to the back of Country Bear Jamboree. We actually fed Owen a bottle on It's a Small World.
Love it.
It was actually, that was his, I would say that's his first, no, it was his second dark ride. First at Magic Kingdom. And he was getting a little fussy. And we're like, you know what? I think he's pretty hungry. So he had dinner and a show.
Hey, how about that? Didn't need a hoop-de-doo review reservations.
Yeah. Buses are not a good place to feed. We fed on the monorail. We fed on the Skyliner. Awesome.
They're very cool.
Let's just put it this way. Erin and I had our own Skyliner, so she was able to feed breastfeed without having people
Thank
around.
You. Yes.
It's very nice. You don't have to throw the cover on or anything. Okay. Like you.
Sounds good. Good stuff.
Okay. But no, the Skyliner is fantastic for that type of thing. Connor, quick note about the Skyliner. I got to say, did you know? Can you hear Owen crying right now in the other room?
No, I can't. He knows we're talking about us.
Yeah,
we're talking about him.
We're talking about him. He's like, I want to go back. The Skyliner, this was reported first by Jim Hill and Len Testa about how people don't really like the Skyliners with the characters on them as much.
I completely agree with them. I mean,
I noticed this too. I noticed all the newer pods that were like off to the side at Caribbean and other places that were undergoing maintenance, they never had the stickers on them.
Yeah. So the big thing, you know, when these were...
So, sorry, the thing that was being reported, I totally skipped over that. The report is people don't like the ones with stickers.
Yes. The you know, when these were announced and we first started seeing, these artist renderings, everyone was like, oh, I want to ride the Marvel one. You know, I want to ride the Guardians of the Galaxy one. I want to ride the Coco one or the Mickey one. And they have these wraps on them. But then what people realized once they got on the ride itself is, yes, there's a wrap on it, but and it's perforated in a sense. So like there's little holes that you can see through. But the best part about the Skyliner is the view. And any subtle, small hindrance of that view, which those stickers do,
absolutely they do,
really drops the experience you have. So I've been lucky. I think I've only had one or two times where I've been
like 50-50.
Yeah, I've been in one that has a wrap on it. I love the ones that don't have it just because the view is spectacular.
It's so much better.
And it's awesome.
It is really fantastic. Yeah, that was my first time on the Skyliner.
Yeah.
But you know what? I'm starting to get into the trip report, so I might as well just go into my day-by-day a little bit, Connor, let you know what was going on world in early February. So we checked into Coronado Springs on the night that we got there after that Magical Express. Got in there pretty late that night at Coronado Springs. Again, we've talked about this a lot, how much we like that resort. Love the Villa del Lago, the Three Bridges restaurant out in the middle of the lake. And the ability to just go out there and grab a quick glass of wine or something, which we did that night, just after a long evening of travel, and then hit the hay. But our first day in the park the next morning was all about living through the virtual queue madness that is Rise of Resistance at Hollywood Studios.
Yeah.
So we took a lift over, like $7 from our hotel to get there nice and early, moved through security pretty quickly, and we're in the park before at like 7:30 before the park officially opened at 8. Stood around, got all nervous about the virtual queue system, which we've talked about how to get on and off that.
So Hank,
yes, question.
Was it like everyone was clearly doing the same thing? Like, was there like I picture it as just a sea of people all in a hushed tone, you know, like conspiring against one another in a way.
I kind of thought it was going to be like that too. And it felt it felt very much like a normal rope drop, just because everyone's already on their phones to begin with. It didn't feel that different until 8 o'clock hit. And that's when it was like everyone like all nervous about like when that announcement came on in the park and everyone trying to figure it out. And then different groups of people cheering. And then at the same time that people are cheering and stuff, the rope is dropping. And if you're over by Tower of Terror, people are like running in to get on Tower of Terror first. So it's like it's bedlam. It really is like stressful. So,
and I think one of the things that we've said, and now that you've done it, is if you're going there with the, you know, number one goal of doing Rise of the Resistance and you need that boarding pass, then have that be your focus. Don't try to also rope drop Slinky Dog Dash.
I know because definitely don't do that one.
Yeah. Almost it sounds like you and Hank, once you get through security, maybe you go off to the right and, you know, just hang on the benches.
Oh, yeah. We were in Hollywood Boulevard over there.
Yeah. So I think that's a good plan.
So, we were just hanging out. But it was me and my brother-in-law both had the app ready to go. And, like, I had my Apple Watch ready with the second hand. So I was in right away and mine didn't show up. And I was like, shoot, here we go. And so I'm, like, going back and forth. Like, you know.
What do you mean yours didn't show up?
When I clicked on like view boarding groups or like get a boarding group, it just like was still the same way that it would have been before 7:59.
Gotcha.
Just like not showing that I could actually get a spot.
Gotcha.
And then but my brother-in-law's immediately got it and I had briefed him on how to do it and, you know, select everyone in the group that was there and immediately click yes. And so we got boarding group 36, ooh, which is really early, which that day, it showed that it was going to be only – they were only promising like 60 guaranteed boarding groups. So we were really happy that we got 36. I was like, based on what I've seen, we'll be on the ride between like – I'd say like 11 and 12, boarding group 36. So let's go do some stuff. Let's hang out in Hollywood Studios. So we did Tower of Terror. That was the first time my father-in-law had ever been on a Disney ride. So
good ride.
Pretty cool to do Tower of Terror. Yeah, great first attraction for him. We rolled out to Galaxy's Edge after that. The whole group met up. My wife and her mother came with Owen a little bit later because just we sent four people in the park that morning to do the boarding group experience for virtual queue.
So those four were the only four that were going to be able to ride it then?
Correct, yeah. Yes. Because we weren't going to send everyone on it anyways.
That's fair.
And then so we went out to Galaxy's Edge, got a Ronto wrap from Ronto's Roasters. That was actually my first Ronto wrap,
Connor. Breakfast wrap?
I did not get a breakfast wrap.
Normal one's real good. I like it a lot.
The normal one just looked better to me, even at that time of the day. I think it was around like 10 then. And it's still just – I mean, it was a great breakfast item. The pita bread is very good.
The pita bread is incredible.
Really,
yeah.
Yeah, I do really it's like that.
It's really good.
Also, a thing that my – who's actually a QA and a scrum master, a QA tester, my brother-in-law, was just like blown away by the accuracy of the location-based in-app messages that Disney's perfected now. Connor, you and I started to see a little of this on like in recent trips, and we've noted it here and there, but it's becoming much more integral into the park experience now. Like there's such a perfect cadence to these messages now that when we went to Ronto's Roasters and stopped moving for a moment while we were looking for a table, it was like, hey, by the way, you know you don't have to wait in this line. You can mobile order right now for Ronto's Roasters.
That's wild.
Do you want to do this? Right in. I was going to mobile order anyways, but instead I look at my phone, I see the notification, boom, I pay.
Yeah.
I mean, brilliant. Brilliant.
Yeah, yeah, because the first few, you know, were – of these push
notifications. You can get a reservation at Tiffin's.
Or we would see a lot of like, welcome to Magic Kingdom. We hope you enjoy your day here today. You can go around and look for guest experience team members in the blue shirts. And
a lot of those.
But that was just kind of like, you get through the gates. All right, that's easy to ping once you're in the park. It's a huge expanse or whatever. But those like more specific, those are pretty crazy.
Oh, you know? Man. I saw that one and I was like, boy, these notifications are about to become next level. It's still not fully fledged. Like, it's not totally out everywhere. That's still a lot of those guest experiences ones, but they're getting better. You're starting to notice that, I mean, if they can do it, that that example right there is enough to show the future of those.
Yeah.
So very cool. We had time. We had not been called yet for Rise of the Resistance. Connor, the park was crowded, super busy. It was not projected by touring plans as a very high high attendance day. The days that we were there, it was supposed to be pretty low on the crowd calendars, but it was way, way up. Even if you go into Touring Plans website, they wrote a few blog posts over the past few weeks about park attendance is way, way up the first 2 months of the year so far. The month of January and February, park attendance is up 20% year over year.
That's insane.
It's messing up yet again. Their algorithms are not correct on like how busy the parks are going to be. Because we were traveling at what was typically supposed to be a huge letdown week between after post-marathon and before spring break really kicks in for some colleges.
Before President's Day. You know, President's
before
Day
President's
right
Day.
Now,
big, exactly.
Big weekend. Yeah.
Big weekend there. But Disney is perfecting the art of making sure that that park is full year round, not just with prices, but also with events on property. So whether that be big things like you think of Food and Wine in the fall, or of course, the marathon weekend's a great example of how they filled a normally dead weekend with a high attendance. But now they're starting to even get the next level in. And Connor, we were there for a cheerleading competition.
Oh, like yeah.
A big one at
thing.
The Wide
World. That's actually when I went a couple times because my cousin competed in that, like the national cheer championships.
Yeah, because you're always close to the Super Bowl. Right. Exactly.
And yeah,
boy.
They take over Wide World of Sports, but because of your and the All-Star Resorts, but because of your like package with the team or whatever, you get a certain number of park hoppers. So they're all over the place.
Yeah, all over the place. Not too much of an effect, but there would be times where, like, what, for example, we are going to Joffrey's in Tomorrowland, and like a gaggle approached Joffrey's, and you're like, nope, can't go there now.
Yes, we won't get coffee today.
No, that was a good thought, but it's like 40 of them get in line. You're like, well, great, I'm not going to wait in there.
Yeah.
And like, but if 40 people get in front of you for like Flight of Passage, you're like, well, whatever.
That's a good
you
point, know? Yeah.
Like that, it doesn't make that big of a difference. But there are those moments where you're kind of like, well, I guess I'm not eating there.
Oh, boy. All right. So you're in Galaxy's Edge. You get a Ronto
wrap. We went over to Toy Story Mania.
Nice.
We decided we had some multiple experience passes that we needed to burn. And we were like, oh, let's go to Toy Story Mania since we can't do Slinky Dog Dash. Fun fact, the multiple experience pass that we had did not work for Toy Story Mania.
Interesting.
Which I was totally thrown off guard. And she's like, oh, do you mind pulling up and see which ones this is good for? And I'm like, oh my God, I'm so embarrassed. Yeah. I don't have one for this. But the cast member was super nice. And she was like, actually, you know, you guys, how many you got? Six? Go ahead.
Owen, so was this Owen's first?
No, Owen did not go on Toy
Story
Mania.
Okay.
No, yeah, he did not go in Toy Story Mania. My brother-in-law set the high score for the day on the
wow,
and I didn't even give him any tips. I had my playbook, and he still
AJ,
beat me.
AJ, right on.
I was actually super disappointed because he beat me by like 5,000 points.
Yeah.
And you know the big targets at the end that go 5,000.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, so AJ, on the last one, did you get to 5,000 or what did I say? I said, did you get to 2,000 on it? And he goes, oh, I got to 5,000. I think I hit the 5,000 one a couple times. And I'm like,
wow, that's
me.
Impressive.
And I was like, how did you do that? Yeah. I was like, I was banging away at the 2,000 and I did not get to 5.
Yeah.
He goes, yeah, I think I got like one or two in there. So I lost to him that closely.
Oh, man, brutal.
Yeah, so lost him on that, but he did set the high score for the day, which is cool.
Awesome.
I've never been
very
a part
cool.
of one of those
yeah.
things. And then, Connor, we loitered a lot. One thing you'll notice with when you have a baby, you got to stop and feed, and you got a big group, you got to go to the bathroom, people get hungry, people need a snack. The silver lining to that type of thing, though, is a lot of these Disney parks do such a good job with landscaping and areas where it's okay to just feel comfortable loitering around or grabbing a space and letting people go to the bathroom, letting a mother feed, let people grab water. And I think Galaxy's Edge is a great example of that. We were just able to hang out over there and like take people into Doc Ondar's and have people watch the show and take pictures with the Millennium Falcon. And, you know, it's just like a place where it felt, you know, like being in a city. It was fine. It was just, it was vibrant. So I really appreciated having that Galaxy's Edge like escape right there for that type of like loitering that we were doing for a good chunk of the morning.
Very cool.
Connor, and this is where we started to get a little nervous. Oh, you know what? I totally missed something. We went to Oga's Cantina as a group with Owen. We had a booth. We had a very nice family, or not family, a couple of two that they stuck with our family of seven at the booth because they got to use up every space in there. And we had a great time. For the newcomers, for people that don't normally like cocktails, which are my in-laws, it was very fun in there. People were taking pictures and getting, like, just loving how the waiters and waitresses were singing. We had a great rapport with our person there who, our bartender, I guess she's just our waitress, had a great rapport with the group about, like, I didn't really understand where Earth was from and, like, this water thing that we drank. And she just had a great shtick.
Nice.
We really liked her.
Nice.
So Oga's Cantina was a big hit that morning. And at that point, we're back in this like loitering phase through Galaxy's Edge because Rise of the Resistance was having some operational troubles. We could tell that morning. Mm-hmm. You could tell they had to empty the queue because numbers didn't go up for a long time. We're like, shoot, this is messing up our day a little bit, and we're pushing like later and later into the day.
Yeah.
Connor, and then we didn't end up queuing for Rise of the Resistance until. I want to say like 1:30.
Yeah.
And at that point, we had burnt like a lot of the day and we got in the queue. And the queue was like another hour and it was moving really slow. I'm like, there is something wrong with this ride today. Yeah. The beast is fussy. But the second that you get into that, and I will not give away too much of the experience for those of you at home or you, Connor.
Please don't.
Who's at home.
Please don't.
Once you start to get into the show scenes, as I'll put it, it's really special. It's a really cool experience. It's something unlike anything I've ever experienced. Moving through that stuff, everyone on Earth has seen the big reveal of the opening the doors into the Star Destroyer's bay. Yeah. And you see all the stormtroopers there. It really is kind of like a jaw-dropping moment. Everyone with you is kind of like gasping and like just taking it all in. And the ride experience, Connor, I was evacuated off my first ride.
Oh, boy.
We talked about it, how it was a dream of ours, and it came at the wrong time for this guy. about halfway through one portion of the ride, lights flick on. A British woman's voice comes over, is like, please pay attention. The Star Destroyer is under maintenance or something like that. And then it was like another announcement came on. It was like, hang on, everyone, we're coming out to get you. I will say, so another part is that the cast members on Rise of the Resistance are probably some of the best cast members anywhere on property. I mean, they worked hard to get these roles. I can't wait for you to ride it because I want to talk a little bit about our cast member experience and some of the interactions that we had with them. I can say like the ones that were with the First Order, very mean, but like not to the point where they'd scare you.
Yeah.
Like snooty enough where it's fun to interact the wrong way with them. Great people in character to be First Order folks. Anyways, the announcement comes on. We're stuck in our little driver or trackless vehicle in the middle of nowhere, and here come the First Order people that we had been interacting with before, who were like ironclad, not breaking character, and they come out and they're like, sorry folks, we're out of character now, but we're gonna come out and get you. And we had a nice chat with them. Yeah. And they were very friendly and escorted us through some very cool hallways, really got to explore, walked through show scenes that I can't even describe how cool it was walking through some of those show scenes. But getting walked off that ride was definitely like an experience to remember. Very disappointing that I had been broken
for sure
from the show.
Yeah.
But walking down and out of that building was something really unique. I did learn, though. I was chatting with one of the cast members that was taking us off the ride there. I was like, because we went by a certain part, and like an idiot, I've watched the ride through videos already. And I said, I just noticed, was that animatronic in B mode today? And he goes, very good. Yes, it was. And I was like, oh my God, thank God I didn't get there. And he goes, we're hoping it's back up later today. But he's been in B mode today. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Interesting.
So I was like kind of happy that I didn't have to get let down by B mode.
Yeah. But, there you go.
So got off the ride. They gave us the fast passes. And Connor, at that point, our family was done with Hollywood Studios for the day. We could not stick around. We had loitered so long. We had made a lot of people wait around where that was it. We had that fast pass for Rise of the Resistance, but when we were there for a 2-day experience, we couldn't stick around to ride the rest of the experience later. So, Connor, I have half ridden Rise of the Resistance.
Few people can say that.
Yeah. Except for the people in the car in front of us who had been evac'd twice.
Oh, that no. Day
from Australia.
Oh, man.
They're like, yeah, we're going to a different park now. They were also very friendly, but they were like, yeah, that's the second time that we've been evac'd on this ride today. I'll get back to it. I've got some thoughts on that later. Connor, we went to Epcot later in the day. Food and Wine Fest. Not Food and Wine. Good Lord. It was Festival of the Arts. Mm-hmm. Still a good amount of food, a lot of art happening there. First time experience for our in-law parents to go in and eat around the world. We were very hungry at that point. I mean, it was mid-afternoon by then, and people had been kind of holding off because we were going to go to Epcot for lunch and eat out there. So people just – we tore through World Showcase and just really sampled a lot of stuff. The food – I don't know if this is just a comment in general or if it's a food Festival of the Arts thing specifically. Food is getting really good.
Yeah,
I felt like each time I go back to a festival at Epcot, I feel like it's getting better.
What's that thing that Gladwell, you know, you got to work 10,000 hours before you master something. Now that there's a festival every single season almost, there's so little lag time to get it up, right? The processes are in place for the cooks, for the chefs, for the cast members working the booths, for the back behind the scenes cast members. So because of all that, it seems like it's much more streamlined, which means they can focus on perfecting, you know, those dishes.
You can see it. The food is getting better. Not that it was ever bad. But it's getting to the point where my mother-in-law, who's like a very big cook, and she was saying everything was excellent.
Yeah.
Like really did enjoy it. I forgot to mention we took the Skyliner over there. Loved. Talked about that. Such an easy transition from Hollywood Studios to Epcot, especially dropping in the back of the World Showcase out there. And then when we exited the park, we took the monorail to Magic Kingdom. So we really efficiency.
Yeah.
We just made our little question mark out of there.
Mm-hmm.
If you can imagine that shape to get out of the park. But Connor, one thing that I do want to mention, we walked into the World Showcase, and you've seen pictures of this. We walk in at the back entrance, and Aaron and I have Owen. We're with our in-laws. Some people ran off to get food because they were like actually about to pass out, how hungry they were. And Aaron and I look at each other, and I look over to the side and go, that's Mickey Mouse right there.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Mickey's standing right here by the back entrance, and there's no queue.
Mm-hmm.
There was like two people. It was like a photo op that you'd see like a photographer standing in the middle of Main Street USA, but it's Mickey. And then I look around and then Minnie's across the way and then Goofy just standing out by the entrance of Epcot or the World Showcase.
I think they know that. I've seen that now a couple times. And I think it's because the Skyliner, they know, okay, a lot more people are coming in this way. This is much more of a entrance and an exit point. More so now than it's ever been before. Let's try to hit them off the bat with boom, Disney right in your face.
Yeah. And I think another thing too is there's a lot of misplaced meet and greet characters in Epcot right now. So like Mickey doesn't have anywhere else to go.
Very true.
When Interventions is like gone. So they need these spaces. And like you're saying, it's a perfect spot to like go, bam, you're in Disney World still.
Yeah.
But it was so cool because I was like, well, we have to queue for this. You're either out $40 for a breakfast or a fast pass or an hour and 20 minute queue to normally meet Mickey. And we have a chance right here to wait 2 minutes to get a photo op in front of like this beautiful lake back here. So wait in line. There was a group behind us that was like the same way as us that goes, are we really about to meet Mickey with no queue? Like this feels wrong. Mickey was really sweet. I heard that from a cast member that all those characters out there, since they weren't like in a formalized character space or at like a character breakfast or meal, they were actually all cast members in training too.
Mm.
But I thought ours was delightful. Very, very cute, Mickey. Loved Owen's shoes. gave Owen a few kisses on the nose. Very sweet. But that was cool. That was cool to have Owen meet Mickey going into Epcot. And then, Connor, as I finished my loop around the world showcase, I did, as you've recommended many times on the podcast over the past few months, I did get into Epcot Experience.
Nice.
So super excited about that. I did get in there just a few minutes just to look around and watch the set change a couple times. It makes you wish that there were more Circle Vision moments like that inside of Epcot. Like, I wish Canada, what's the name of the new film?
Now it's Far in Canada, Far and Wide. But
Canada, Far and Wide.
You mean like the 360 theater with like
seamless
a projection mapping?
With a projection mapping.
Like another element to it.
Yeah. With the seamless screens. But man, just like you said, that is a cool experience. And right now, while Epcot is a war zone, doesn't actually feel quite as bad on the ground. I will say that. A lot of us that listen to these podcasts, we see a lot of pictures from above and from the monorail and whatnot, and it looks really messy. But when you're on the ground, yes, it can feel a little congested in areas, but you don't really feel like you're in a construction zone too often.
Yeah.
There are a lot of moments where you're kind of like, oh, dead end. I can't go that way today. I'm normally the guy that knows what to do, but like right now I'm not positive on how to get out of here. But it feels a little bit more clean. Yeah. We also got Owen's first ride was Living with the Land.
Love it.
Yeah.
Perfect.
He was a little bit upset at the beginning because not a big fan of the dark. And pretty much the half of that ride is just pitch black.
He also hates produce. Right?
Yes, hates produce. Hates produce. But did much better in the greenhouse space. Cool. Greenhouse space was great. My mother-in-law, who is a big culinary fan, was really enjoying all the vertical farming and whatnot. Very cool to see all the plants through there. We were excited to get on Living with the Land. And honestly, Connor, we were out of there. We had to keep moving because we had big plans at Magic Kingdom that evening. So we hopped on the monorail. Zipped quickly over to the TTC, made a quick transfer, and we are in Magic Kingdom by about 6:30 that evening for a dessert party at the fireworks.
Very nice.
Did the dessert party, nothing to write home about food-wise, but boy, Connor, watching the fireworks from the AstroTurfed area with a great viewing space is something that I feel like a lot of people pay that money for just to do that.
And you have some breathing room too, you know?
A lot of it.
Totally do it just for the fireworks. They could care less
100%
about the dessert.
100%.
Now, was the desserts, they were there or were they at Tomorrowland Terrace?
Tomorrowland Terrace.
So their desserts there, but then you
walk over.
And then
someone with like a glow stick takes you over. Yeah, the little like waving band.
Okay.
They walk you over and escort you and let you into the little viewing area. And they don't overcrowd it, which is really nice. They leave it. There's a lot of people in them from the dessert party, but there's plenty of room. Noah, everyone's got a good viewing space. And Connor, this is where Dad and Mom got a little emotional because Owen was asleep for the start of the fireworks.
Come on, guy.
And after the music hit and the fireworks started to pop off, Owen was like, What is going on out there? So we picked him up, and he was, for the next 15 minutes, so I have never seen him so transfixed by what was transpiring in front of him. The fireworks, Owen was like, it was the highlight of the trip for Owen, was just locked into the fireworks with the music playing because he loves music, and seeing the bright lights and the explosions. And Disney does a great job choreographing the musical numbers into this thing to make sure Mom and Dad are, you know, really trying to wipe away their tears before their in-laws can see too many of them.
Well, that's awesome. And it's cool to hear that he was so into it. Yeah.
It was pretty cool because we, We've definitely listened to a fair amount of Disney tracks with him. So there, it was cool to like have those moments show up where you're like, oh, and it's like the song, like, cause of course he knows exactly
what he's talking about. He knows exactly word for word.
He knows exactly what we're talking about. But like when they listened to a lot of Tarzan with him, cause he likes the boppy Phil Collins beats and whatnot. But the second that they play like that, "You'll Be in My Heart," that's where mom and dad are like, gosh,
"You'll Be in My Heart, little guy."
Yeah, I know. Yeah, little guy. And very cool. Probably the highlight of it. Easily the highlight of the trip being at the fireworks.
Awesome.
Magic Kingdom.
Love it.
Next day we were back in the parks, Connor. We went to Animal Kingdom. Took my father-in-law, who's a big racing fan, loves sports cars, loves big thrills, was all about trying to get on the biggest, baddest rides when he was in Disney World. Turns out, I know we had limited time in each park, but boy, was Animal Kingdom a big hit for the family the next day. Cool. It was aces across the board. If we had like moments of contention the day before where we were hungry in Epcot, or we were tired in Magic Kingdom, or we were bored waiting for things in Hollywood Studios, Animal Kingdom was the savior the next day. On people couldn't stop talking about Flight of Passage. People were enamored by how cool and immersive the safari was. And like my father-in-law was just blown away by the experience of Flight of Passage and Expedition Everest. So
as he should be,
those little moments just like really can help tie a trip together. I've talked enough about Animal Kingdom on this podcast before, where it is just such a my favorite park. I love everything that Joe Rody. I'm able to talk like you and I probably talk too much like Joe Rody when we explain things to people that have never been before. Not too much like Joe Rody, but you know, at least hit some of his cues where he talks about like why things are certain ways in the park, and being able to bring that to life to people that have never been there before. It really does feel like a Disney park, and it was a great time. Of course, we had to do Sanaa for lunch with the group. We're so predictable.
Very nice. Yep.
And then, gosh, it's a whirlwind couple days, but a small group of us were back at Magic Kingdom later that evening. We had some time for the pool at Coronado Springs. Ooh. That afternoon. So Owen got to do his first pool swim at Coronado Springs. Nice afternoon. But Magic Kingdom that evening, we were able to knock down Space Mountain and Haunted Mansion. Took Owen, like I said, on Small World, where he got to have his dinner and a show. And then my brother-in-law and our friend who lives down in Orlando were able to do Big Thunder Mountain while we were tending to the baby. I did get to use the Tangled Bathrooms cover.
Oh, a lovely bathroom.
Got to change a diaper and park a stroller over in the Tangled Bathroom. So, you know, I've really become a parent now.
Good for you.
Yeah, and took my child on It's a Small World. He did okay. Yeah. He did okay on It's a Small World. But all in all, it's busy. You can see me kind of flying through a lot of this stuff here at the end because it does kind of like blur together a little bit. But I also completely forgot to mention the night before, Connor, when we were in Magic Kingdom waiting for the fireworks to start after we had had our little dessert party moment. We were going to go on Space Mountain. Space Mountain was down. And so I said, Space Mountain's down. You know what that means. Let's go get on the People Mover. So we hopped on the People Mover, and sure enough, got to check out Space Mountain with the lights on.
Nice.
I'd never seen it with my own eyes.
There you go. It's beautiful, isn't it?
It's beautiful and terrifying.
And terrifying, very.
Yeah. The one thing that I will say, and I've seen this in pictures before, but it is cool to see in person, where you're kind of like, oh, wow, I didn't realize, like, there's a lot of space between like the very top of the track and like the rest of the building.
Yeah.
It feels smaller and more compact in the middle.
Yeah.
Then you think it would like occupy every square foot of that building. But yeah, it's just kind of nestled right there in the middle. But yeah, Space Mountain was up and running again for us the next evening. So glad that we were able to get on that. I did promise that I would talk a little bit at the end. I'd be remiss if I didn't say, all in all, fantastic trip. Great to be down there. We will be back again many, many times. But I will say I had a sense of something that I've never quite had before in the park that I will keep an eye on over the next several years. We spent, for a short stay, it is getting more expensive. Like you and I have talked about before, it is a lot of money. It's a lot of money to buy park tickets. It's a lot of money to stay at a resort. It's a lot of money to spend while you're on property, which you're always okay with on vacation. You're there to experience stuff. Vacations are going to be more expensive. I noticed this past time that some of the only guarantees at Disney World are the things that you're going to spend more money on. Rise of the Resistance, not guaranteed. I didn't spend anything extra on that. I didn't get on Smuggler's Run, which we wanted to, because you can't pay for that experience. If I had wanted to build a lightsaber, guaranteed experience. Mm. If I had wanted to do, we did Ogus Cantina. That's a paid experience. If we had wanted to, we did the dessert party, paid experience. It seemed like to me, a lot of the things that like you could guarantee in a busy time were things that you could definitely pay a little bit more for. Not saying you need a VIP tour, not saying you need to pay for anything more, but when you're in property spending all that cash, I couldn't help but notice there were so many opportunities now where it's like, hey, it's a little bit easier if you spend a little bit more. And that whispering has grown a little bit louder over the past few years. And it's something I just want, I'm going to keep an eye on, and I hope and pray that it's a thing that stays like a whisper right now and doesn't grow into a roar. Because I felt a little bit, you always feel shaken dry a little bit from Disney money, spending money at Disney World. That's a thing that everyone expects. That's a thing that you're able to laugh about when you get home. But I never want to feel like I wasted time here because I didn't spend a little bit more. And that's where I hope that Disney's able to keep that balance in check over the next few years. And I sense that a little bit with opening a ride like Rise of the Resistance that might not totally be ready to handle large crowds. And I felt it a little bit with Magic Kingdom having Splash Mountain down. And when Space Mountain was down, having two big rides like that, everything was crunched and we didn't really have time for much else. But thank goodness we had the paid experience to offer that out through a dessert party type of thing. So just something I felt like I would have to say. Again, this is a podcast with optimism, so I'm hopeful that it can be fixed. But something I definitely want to keep an eye on over the next few years.
Yeah. No, it's definitely something to keep an eye on. I think, you know, the biggest thing is going to be when those paid experiences, if ever, take over those free experiences, you know, because everything now, you can still watch the fireworks, you know, you can still experience Galaxy's Edge without, you know, buying a drink or whatever. They're not depriving you of anything. But I think if it ever gets to the point when, oh, well, now, you know, you got to pay this price to get XYZ.
Well,
that's complimentary. That's when we're going to start to hear it.
And you start to, even the way that you phrase that sentence, Connor, it immediately reminded me, it started to jog my memory of, hey, do you want to actually ride all the rides? Well, you can come to the after hours thing and ride them a bunch. It's just going to cost you another big chunk of change to be there.
Absolutely.
So it does happen. And this is not doomsday saying the sky is falling, Disney World has lost its spirit. There are so many moments there where, you know, your breath is taken away. The magic is still there. All that stuff. But there is that foreboding where there's got to be a balance struck over the next several years. And we're at an important time where everything can't be an upgrade, because a Disney World experience in itself is an upgrade of a vacation already.
Absolutely.
I'm happy to spend top dollar to get the premium Disney World experience, but I don't want to feel like I need to spend even more on top of that to continue to get the magical experience.
And now you're hooked because Owen's addicted to fireworks and you can't deprive him of that. As a good father, you can't deprive
fireworks, him of Connor, that. I'm glad you brought up the fireworks again. Huge hit for people, like for people that had never been to the park before. And never seen like a fireworks show, especially with that viewing area and everything. The fireworks are just like, you forget if you go and watch them all the time. Disney World fireworks are special.
And because everyone always has an idea of what fireworks is in their mind. 4th of July, at the country club, 4th of July, at the park, local park, you know, whatever, at the pool. But so they have that idea of, well, how great can it actually be? And then you're like, oh my God, it can be amazing. Disney does not let you down in that regard. Any other closing thoughts, Hank, on your trip? It sounded great.
Bring help for a newborn. It was fine. I think Aaron and I could have done very well. We would have been pretty limited on rider switch stuff that we could have done because my wife doesn't like riding alone. I would only want to ride so many things by myself anyways.
It seems like he spent a lot more time with you out in the parks than you originally anticipated.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. But it was great because we were able to bring, you know, in-laws along or that type of thing. Bring people that, I mean, not even like to have people watch, but it's just to like, you know, with the beauty that is rider switch, take advantage of it, you know, allow more people to go on that ride a few times while someone pushes a stroller around, you know?
Yeah.
So it's just great having help, makes things a lot less stressful. So build yourself a little network of friends and family and don't feel like there's ever a time where Disney doesn't make sure that it can cater to anyone.
Yes. Agreed. Well, very, very cool. You know, Hank did it. If Hank did it, anyone can do it out there, right?
Sure.
Yeah, sure. But it was something where, you know, a lot of people were like, oh, God, 2-month-old, 3-month-old. Oh, boy, good luck with that. But it sounds
very
like
easy stage. Yeah.
It sounds like it's been one of your more memorable trips, which I think is good.
For sure.
And it's definitely opened up a new chapter in your Disney fandom. You know, now you're going to be able to see the parks, the movies, the soundtrack, you know, big music guy, owns big music guy, through his eyes, which I think is very, very cool. And you pass that baton on to the next generation. Hank, you're doing good. You're doing good.
Glad to do it.
Thank you so very much for listening to the show. We might be done talking here, but we encourage you to continue the conversation on our Opinioneers Facebook page. That's where the WDW Opinion community meets. You're an Opinioneer just for listening to this show, and we want you to connect with your fellow Disney fanatics. Visit wdwopinion.com/opinioneers, that's OPINIONEERS, to join the community. And speaking of the WDW Opinion community, we want it to continue to grow. And what's the best way to grow this community? Well, it's all about spreading the word. If you think you know someone who would like the show, then share it with them. The more, the merrier. And if you also enjoy listening to WDW Opinion Podcast, please do me a huge, huge favor. Leave a review of the show over on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, I guess it's called now. It would mean the world to us if you did, and it also helps others find the show. You can check out wdwopinion.com/episode73 to learn about how to leave a review. If you want to check out all the links we've referenced in this show, head over to our show notes page at wdwopinion.com/episode73. While you're there, you can also check out all of our other content we have on the WDW Opinion blog, like our recent lunch review of the Brown Derby, the Hollywood Brown Derby at Hollywood Studios. Very, very good. You're going to want to check that out. Also, I've written a book, From Yacht Club to Diamond Mine. It details all my story and my experience working at Walt Disney World, where I worked as a front desk cast member at the Yacht and Beach Club Resorts, and also in the mine where a million diamonds shine on the Seven Dwarfs mine train. There's a lot of great stories in that, you know, I wanted to share my story with all of you. So if you want to purchase From Yacht Club to Diamond Mine, you can go over to wdwopinion.com/book, B-O-O-K, and you can learn more about the book over there. And that's going to do it for us this week. If you liked what you heard today, then you've been listening to the WDW Opinion Podcast. If by chance you didn't like what you heard, then you've been listening to the McMillions Podcast. For Hank, I'm Connor. We'll see you real soon.